Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Welcome. It's so nice to have you with us here on the Faith Radio today. Hey, you ever talk to somebody who just says, you know, Christianity, I don't want anything to do with it, doesn't really have anything to offer to me? Maybe you've known somebody who was a Christian and they gave up on the Christian faith. Why is that? Well, according to a top worldview expert, the main reason is unanswered intellectual questions. Now, even though that's true, she argues that many churches treat faith as a mostly emotional experience. I'm talking about Nancy Piercy. She has a new book out called Finding Truth, Five Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. And in that book, she provides a whole bunch of strategies to help Christians think about issues that challenge their faith. And she'll be joining us here in just a few minutes on the Faith Radio Network. And trust me, she will challenge you. She will tell you about her concerns about the youth of America, because she's very burdened. She's currently teaching at Houston Baptist University and teaching Christian young people. And she'll tell you what she has found about biblical literacy among American young people today. And that's going to be a great conversation. So, and you may recognize Nancy's name from the books that she co-authored with Chuck Colson and, of course, the Breakpoint Commentaries. So stick with us coming up in just a few minutes as we chat with Nancy. You ever go to the grocery store on an empty stomach? You may have heard that's a big mistake. And now, yes, research confirms it. I love stories like this. Cornell University did this innovative study to see if people change their shopping habits if they eat an apple before they go to the grocery store. And you guessed it, if you eat an apple before you shop, you are more likely to buy healthier foods. Researchers at Cornell performed a couple of different experiments. In the first one, they randomly provided an apple sample, a cookie sample, or no sample to 120 people before they went shopping. And then they looked at what the people bought. And the people who ate an apple bought 28% more fruits and vegetables than those who ate a cookie, and 25% more fruits and vegetables than those who didn't eat anything. Then they did another study, and they randomly gave 56 people either a cookie or an apple. I would have asked for the cookie. And then they asked them to shop online and choose between 20 different food pairs. And what they showed them was these different foods that included a high-calorie snack and a low-calorie choice. And yes, you guessed it, the cookie eaters pick the unhealthy foods more often. Leslie Bonsi is the director of sports nutrition at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, and she says this study shows that making a smart decision can help people become better shoppers. Leslie says, an apple before you start leads to better choices in your cart. She's a poet and she don't know it. Dr. Bonsi recommends a few other tricks to help us change our shopping habits. Always take a list with you when shopping. That prevents you from splurging on unhealthy foods. And consider, I thought this was interesting. She says, consider chewing gum or drinking water. Why? Because it keeps your mouth busy and it reduces temptation. So there you go. Eat an apple, chew some gum before you go to the store. It'll help you resist the impulse buying. I'm going to pass that on to my wife this afternoon. Hey, what happens to teenagers when they watch movies that feature a lot of booze? Well, as you might expect, they are more likely to drink alcohol themselves. New study out found that when kids see actors drink in films, it increases the likelihood that they will drink and have problems related to alcohol. Now, this is just one. We have so many studies out now on this, but the body of research is growing, and it's showing that teens are more likely to engage in a variety of risky behaviors if they see those behaviors in the films and the TV shows they watch. Now, this particular study doesn't prove that watching films or TV shows with alcohol in them causes teens to drink. It's just one possible factor. One expert says there actually is another possible explanation for this. Dr. Victor Strasburger is a professor of pediatrics at the University of New Mexico. He says kids who are more likely to drink or who are already drinking may seek out more films with drinking in them. Guess that makes sense. But he says it is plausible that seeing episodes of drinking in the movies may be the leading cause of teenagers beginning to drink. In this particular study, they surveyed over 5,000 15-year-olds to find out which of 50 movies they'd seen. And they picked these movies from, you know, popular recent films that kids enjoy. And they measured how many minutes in each film showed alcohol use. Well, the teens who watched the most alcohol use in the movies were almost twice as likely to binge drink and more than twice as likely to drink weekly than those who had seen the least amount of alcohol use. We psychologists have a very sophisticated technical expression for this phenomenon. It is called monkey see, monkey do. So, mom and dad, if you're letting your kids watch movies and TV shows that where the characters are getting drunk or smoking marijuana or taking pills, you just be aware that it could indeed have an influence on their behavior, not to mention, of course, their peers who may be pressuring them to use a variety of different substances. So just, you know, something for every mom and dad to be aware of. I think there's far too many parents these days that don't thoughtfully consider the media that they expose their kids to. And I will recommend my friends at Focus on the Family. They have a, if you're not familiar with this, Focus has a youth culture department, and they produce a website, PluggedIn.com, which actually helps parents to teach their kids to be discerning when it comes to their media choices. And they review television shows and movies and music, even video games on this site. So it is a great resource for you, mom and dad. Check it out, PluggedIn.com. Well, it's 12 minutes past the hour. I'm Bill Meyer. Coming up next, my interview with Nancy Piercy as we talk about truth and all of the different God substitutes there are in our culture today. And the unfortunate fact that so many believers are looking for an emotional high without any substance behind it. That's coming up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And you can join the conversation by calling us. 877-93-FAITH is the number. Jot that down, 877-93-FAITH. Want to say hi to our friends who are listening on Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls today. And if you've tuned in on Faith 1190 in Madison, Wisconsin, thanks for taking us with you. Joining us today is Nancy Piercy. Nancy is the director of the Center for Christian Worldview and a professor of apologetics at Houston Baptist University in Houston, Texas. She has been called America's preeminent evangelical Protestant female intellectual by The Economist. She has spoken to actors and screenwriters in Hollywood, to scientists at the Sandia and Los Alamos National Laboratories, to staffers on Capitol Hill and the White House, and to think tanks and public policy groups such as the Family Research Council, the Council for National Policy, and the Heritage Foundation. She's currently a fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Nancy, as you may know, is the founding editor of Breakpoint Radio. She wrote over 1,000 radio commentaries that you may have heard Chuck Colson deliver over the years. Some of her many books include Total Truth, Liberating Christianity from Its Cultural Captivity, Saving Leonardo, A Call to Resist the Secular Assault on Mind, Morals, and Meaning, and a classic that you may have read, and maybe you have it on your shelf or your church library has it, How Now Shall We Live, which was co-authored with Chuck Colson and Harold Fickett. Today she joins us to explore her brand new book, Finding Truth, Five Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. And Nancy, welcome to Faith Radio.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
It is such a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for spending a part of your Saturday with us. I know you have a busy schedule at Houston Baptist University. First of all, I'd love to ask you, how did you end up getting linked up with HBU? Because my understanding is that particular school in recent years has become very passionate about Christian worldview, and you're not the only Christian worldview expert that lectures there.
That's right. It started with Dr. Sloan, who came there about 8 years ago, and he's been turning the school around and making it more intentionally Christian. But my connection came primarily with a new provost 3 years ago, John Mark Reynolds, who was brought in after founding the Honors College at Biola, Victoria Honors Institute. And John Mark Reynolds is especially interested in cultural apologetics, which is a kind of apologetics that was, that term itself was coined to describe the work of Francis Schaeffer, because traditional apologetics was analyzing abstract philosophical arguments for the existence of God and so on. And Schaeffer was so incredibly influential and persuasive because he showed how ideas permeate the culture, how they permeate books and movies and even advertisements, that ideas are coming to us all the time, not necessarily in words, where they're easier to recognize, but through image and characterization and plot line. So this is a creative and interesting new approach to apologetics. It's what worked for me. I became a Christian through the work of Francis Schaeffer at LaGrie. And so when John Mark Reynolds decided to bring cultural apologetics to HBU, that's why he contacted me and asked me to teach here.
And Lee Strobel is teaching there as well. It's been fascinating to kind of watch what that university is doing. Now, as a former agnostic, how did you end up at LaBrie? Tell us about that journey, because that sounds fascinating to me.
It was a long journey, and it started out in a Christian home. I was raised as a Christian, but I was attending a very secular public high school. Not hearing Christian views, not hearing Christian ideas. In fact, the opposite. I had very atheist professors, teachers really, at the high school level. And I started asking, how do we know Christianity is true? Just that question. That was the entry question. My best friend was Jewish, for example. And none of the adults in my life could answer my question. I talked to a Christian college professor. I thought somebody that well-educated would have good reasons. So why are you a Christian? He said, works for me.
Mm.
But that's not enough. I talked to a seminary dean at one point, someone with a theological degree. And all he said was, don't worry, we all have doubts sometimes. And so it was a psychological phase, you know, you'll grow out of it.
So
I was only halfway through high school when I reached the point of saying, I guess Christianity doesn't have any answers. And I decided that it seemed to me a matter of intellectual honesty, that if you don't have good reasons for something, you shouldn't really say you believe it, whether it's Christianity or anything. So I set it aside and decided to see if I could look at it objectively alongside the other philosophies and religions that are out there. It was a very conscious embarking on a search for truth. In fact, I started going down the hallway to the library at the public high school that I attended and just pulling books off the philosophy shelf, because I thought, well, if I can't get adults to talk to me, maybe these philosophers, maybe that's where you deal with questions of what is truth? How do we know it? What's the meaning of life? Is there a foundation for ethics? You know, the choices we make day by day, how do we know that these are right and valid and true? And these became suddenly very pressing, personal questions for me. So it was, by the time I went to LaBrie, which is several years later, and frankly, I went there only because I had some family members who were visiting. So I went to see them. I was going to school in Germany at the time, so I wanted to see some family members. I was not going to this Christian place because I wanted to go to a Christian place. But that was the first place I did hear Christians give good reasons for their convictions. And that was the place I found Christians who understood the secular ideas that I was wrestling with. You see, you know, there's that principle that if people don't know their need, they won't accept an answer. You know, if they don't know that they're sinners, they won't accept the message of salvation. Well, I was going through the intellectual version of that, which is as long as I thought my secular ideas were okay, why should I listen to Christian answers? And so the people at LaBrie were able to show me the weaknesses and failures of the secular ideas that I had embraced. And so that made me open to hearing that Christianity has better answers. And it answers the same questions that every secular worldview tries to answer, but it does a better job of it. So I was intellectually persuaded first and then became a Christian. So that's why I'm so convinced that we need apologists. We need to address young people's questions.
And unfortunately, we're not doing that real well. What does Barna's research say, or some of the other research that you've read? Let's just talk about the average evangelical. Do we have, and I don't mean to, you know, cast aspersions here, but do we have a real failure on the part of many of our churches to really educate the average man and woman in the pews about biblical literacy, Christian worldview, apologetics? Because I, when you said that earlier, and the answer that you receive, you know, well, it's, you know, I believe it because it works for me. That just sounds like a lot of people I know in this day and age. Do we have any hard numbers? Does it seem to you that unfortunately is the majority of Americans sitting in church on Sunday morning?
Well, the hard numbers that I ran into when I was researching my new book, Finding Truth, were studies done of young people asking why they left the church. Why did they leave the Christian faith that they were raised in? And most people assume that it would have something to do with relationship issues. You know, they were hurt. Their feelings were hurt in some way. Some kind of emotional wounding in the church. The researchers were surprised to hear the most frequent answer given by young people was that they were not getting answers to their doubts and questions. The largest of these studies asked open-ended questions, so there was no power of suggestion effect happening here. These were young people speaking in their own words, and they said things like, Christianity just doesn't seem to make sense anymore, or I'm into science, and there seem to be contradictions, or just flat, I can't get answers to my questions. So the empirical research does underscore that this is a major, or the major reason that young people are leaving the church behind, and how important it is for parents and pastors and teachers and youth group leaders to treat young people's questions seriously. And, you know, people think of apologetics as something for intellectuals, but I think it's driven ultimately by love. You should love people enough to listen to them, and you should love people enough to do the hard work of searching out answers to the questions that they're raising.
You know, you did an interview with ChristianPost.com, and you said that one of the reasons for writing this book, it was motivated by a concern for young Christians. And you said, and correct me if I'm off base here, but I believe you said in that interview that church youth groups are often really good at establishing an emotional commitment from kids, but they are failing young Christians intellectually. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that many people, at least this is what I'm getting from my students, this is what I get from youth group leaders, they really think the important thing is to establish an emotional commitment. In fact, somebody just wrote a review of my book, Finding Truth, and case in point, they said, oh, young people don't care about reasons and arguments anymore. You know, they're just looking for the emotional high. And I think that, here's another example. I just pulled this off a blog recently, and a young woman wrote, my parents had no idea what was going on at the university, and so they had no idea how to help me prepare for it. They didn't teach her how to argue persuasively for Christianity. She says it seemed like all the other professors and the other students all had better arguments than I did for the validity of their views. So again, it's hearing from young people themselves and listening to what they say. The most recent example I ran into in terms of a parent talking to me, her son had gone off to a local state university to study psychology. And as you may know, you no doubt know with your background, psychology ever since Freud has been hostile to Christianity. We think Christianity is, you know, something, if you're psychologically immature, you need a crutch. It's an infantile regression, to use Freud's term. It's a projection of the fantasy father figure into the sky. Well, this young man wasn't prepared to deal with those kinds of harsh objections, those harsh misrepresentations of Christianity. And within a semester, he had lost his faith. I can't see sending young people off to state universities or even Christian universities without preparing them. Here are the secular views you're going to encounter, and here are some Christian answers and Christian alternative ways of looking at the data. Young people need that kind of preparation, but as you know, that the numbers are way too high on young people leaving home and leaving their faith behind. So I do think that churches and youth groups need to, and families in particular, need to turn around on this issue and realize we need to be equipping young people at much younger ages for the challenges of an increasingly secular society.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you say that, Nancy. I often say, you know, so many church youth groups today are about pizza and volleyball, and that's kind of where it ends. And what your research has found and others are saying, the George Barnas of the world, these young people are saying, we want answers. We don't mind grappling with some of these hard issues, but help us. So we're talking to Nancy Percy, the author of Finding Truth, Five Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. Brand new book out. We're going to take a quick break here on the Faith Radio Network. And coming back, if you'd like to ask Nancy a question, call us 877-93-FAITH.
Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
Hey, welcome back. Do you happen to know an aspiring author? You might want to encourage them to enter the third annual Faith Radio Writers Contest. It's open to all aspiring authors. Now, the deadline for all submissions is actually tomorrow night at midnight. And the submission should explore the concept of grace in a fiction or a nonfiction story. So you want to get those in by tomorrow night at midnight. Three fiction winners and three nonfiction winners will be selected from 10 finalists chosen by your votes and then announced on June 5th during Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Winners' names will also be posted on our website about the same time. And each winner will be invited to attend the Writer's Luncheon, where they'll have a 15-minute one-on-one appointment with an acquisitions editor from Bethany House Baker Publishing Group. How cool is that? So if you know somebody who's maybe already written something, and again, it's got to be on this concept of grace in a fiction or nonfiction story, have them submit it by tomorrow night at midnight. Now, if you haven't started on your book, it might be kind of hard to get that done by tomorrow at midnight. But I'm excited about this. This will provide some wonderful opportunities for some aspiring writers to maybe get on the map. Well, speaking of writers, we have quite the writer with us today, Nancy Percy. She has written so many wonderful books, including Saving Leonardo, A Call to Resist the Secular Assault on Mind, Morals, and Meaning, How Now Shall We Live, which she wrote with Chuck Colson and Harold Fickett, Total Truth, Liberating Christianity from Its Cultural Captivity. Her new one, just out, is called Finding Truth, Five Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. And man, oh man, she's got some great endorsements. Listen to what Lee Strobel says. Nancy Percy at her best. Totally profound, persuasive, and yet practical. Read it with your highlighter handy. Quite a nice endorsement from Lee. Wouldn't you say that, Nancy?
I'm very grateful. Absolutely.
Well, we go ahead.
The thing about Lee Strobel's endorsement is, you know, we don't always think of evangelizing our own children, our own young people. We think of that as getting equipped to talk to other people on the outside. And one thing I think that made Francis Schaeffer so effective, and as I said, I became a Christian through Francis Schaeffer, is that he realized young people need to be evangelized even in the church. The cultural change is happening so fast these days that often children are absorbing assumptions that are radically different from their own parents. And so in many ways, their parents have to start thinking like missionaries. I was walking down the hallway of a Christian college where I was teaching, and there was a student in the hallway sitting, reading a book on postmodernism. So I said, "Oh, what are you learning?" And he said, "I'm learning about myself. That I finally understand why I think the way I do." So it was a young man from a Christian home who was committed to Christianity, but his worldview had been shaped by postmodernism, and he didn't even realize it, because if you don't understand worldviews, you don't recognize them when they seep into your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's why I really appreciate the endorsement from Lee, because it reminds us we also need to practice evangelism with our own children and in our own churches.
You know, it's interesting because I think a lot of evangelicals, a lot of pastors, when they think about missionaries, they may support missionaries. They get to meet missionaries when they're on furlough, and thank the Lord for the wonderful missionaries that are doing incredible work around the world. And yet, if we would simply equip our kids, and if we've got more than one, if we've got two or three or four kids, the multiplication factor in spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ, talk about a missionary impact on our own country, which, of course, in recent years has become so secular. I do agree with you. I think we need to spend a lot more time and be a lot more intentional. And this involves both mom and dad, and it involves mom and dad partnering with the church youth group. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, Nancy. You may agree with me on this, but if you have a child who is in high school or junior high school, especially if they're going to a public school, and if you're going to a church that does not have a youth group that is proactively teaching your kids to be disciples of Jesus Christ, teaching your kids to discern fact from fiction, teaching your kids even just rudimentary Christian worldview and apologetics principles, it is time to find a new church. It ain't all about watching videos and going on, you know, trips to the lake. Because what's going to happen, and I don't know if you know David Wheaton, our friend who is a... You do. And David, a former professional tennis player from right here in Minnesota, who grew up in a wonderful Christian home, but he wasn't equipped for the philosophical and the moral attack that occurred during his first year at Stanford University, fell away from the faith, and since then, of course, has come back in a big way and loves, just very passionate about Christian worldview. But that just is, it's an indication to all of us, moms and dads, take this seriously. And if you don't go to a church that has that for your kid, I'm gonna say switch churches, or at least encourage your kids to go with a friend who maybe goes to another church in your community where they have that type of a church youth group. That is so critical, because if not, what? And Nancy, I'm sure you can say that, repeat, heard this repeated many times from Christian parents, that what will happen is your child will go off to the University of Minnesota, University of Wisconsin, and they will come back after that first year, and they will say, Mom and Dad, you know, this Christianity thing, it may be fine for you, but I just really don't buy it anymore. And my philosophy professor has helped me to understand that, you know, there's lots of different views, and they're all equal, and there's many ways, many roads to heaven. And, you know, you guys can believe what you want to believe, but this is not for me. And it's happening over and over and over again, and it grieves me so deeply. And so, Nancy, you know, issue that challenge to the mom and dad listening today who maybe hasn't considered that with their junior high or high school student.
You know, I'll take you up on that and take it one further. And that is, even if your child is going to a Christian school or college, my book, Finding Truth, opens with a story of a young man who said, I lost my faith at an evangelical college.
Mm.
It was I had been invited to give a lecture on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and in fact, it was a launch event for my book, Total Truth. And afterward, a congressional chief of staff stood up and announced to everyone in the room, I lost my faith at an evangelical college.
Wow.
And he said that his professors were personally committed to Christianity, but what they taught in the classroom, you know, this sharp, sacred, secular divide. And so in the classroom, they simply taught the textbook. They taught the secular theories in their field, which are often not only secular, but often even hostile to Christianity.
Mm.
And he said they did not offer a Christian alternative. They hadn't looked out a Christian worldview. And he said, he told me, I even went during office hours and pressed them on the issue and said, how do you relate your theological convictions to what you teach in the classroom? And he said, not one of them could give him an answer. And that's why he walked away from Christianity. And how common do you think this is? There was a survey only a few years ago of the CCCU. That's the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. Those are the evangelical colleges. The survey found that only half of the faculty said that they were confident they could give a Christian perspective on their own field.
Mm.
Only half. So that's why it really is up to parents, family, and pastors to take the initiative and get educated in a biblical perspective in every area of life, every field of study, because the secular world is so persuasive and so pervasive that even Christian colleges don't always have an answer.
Yeah,
we need
yeah.
to have an answer for those who ask, as First Peter puts it. We need to have an answer for those who ask, and we can't push that off on anybody else.
Yeah, that's not just a suggestion from Scripture. That is a direct command from Scripture for all of us. And, you know, Nancy, I think about, and I've talked to other students, by the way, that have gone to, you know, quote-unquote secular or Christian universities and had the same experience. And the term that we often use in our field is integration. How do you integrate Christian worldview with history or with art or with mathematics? And there are ways to do that. And yet, unfortunately, what a lot of these schools do is they're more interested in hiring a PhD than they are really hiring somebody who can integrate their Christian faith with their subject matter. So really, every parent needs to do their homework. Now, let me ask you this, Nancy, because I'm sure we have some moms and dads listening today, and they're thinking, yeah, this is all really good stuff, but, you know, I'm so busy, and my kids' schedules are so packed, and, you know, we just don't have time to do this, you know, major intellectual discovery of Christian worldview and apologetics. I'm guessing that you would say, and Lee Strobel and others would say, you know what? If you just took 30 minutes a day, if you just cut back on TV for 30 minutes a day or some other, you know, activity that's really not that important in life, this is one of the most important things you can do for your children. Yeah, they may get really good at ice hockey. They may be the captain of the soccer team. But if they go away to college, even a Christian college, and they lose their faith, They abandon their faith. They jettison their Christian faith because they're not equipped and not prepared. Because you, mom and dad, and I'm not trying to beat up on parents, I'm just saying let's evaluate what's really important here. And the materials are out there, Nancy. Your book is one great example of that. You know, Lee Strobel has those series of books for children. You know, I think there's three or four of them. The Case for Christ for Kids, the Case for a Creator for Kids. So you can even start early. So, talk to that parent who maybe thinks this is just, these things are just too big for my head.
Well, and also there's a stereotype that it's for intellectuals, right? It's for people who read books and spend their lives in libraries. So to counter that stereotype, let me tell you about Lecrae, the hip-hop artist Lecrae.
Lecrae, I love Lecrae.
Lecrae has been promoting my book, Total Truth. And he's now reading through Finding Truth, my newest book. And this was a stereotype breaker, okay, right? This is a young man who grew up here in Houston, by the way. But his father abandoned the family at a young age. He got involved with drugs and gangs and sex and all the negative things that young people get involved with often when their families break apart. And it was when he was a teenager that Christians reached out to him, and he became a Christian. But what's fascinating, he said, the real transformation was not just my conversion. My real transformation happened when I discovered that Christianity is a total worldview, that Christianity does have something to say about the public realm, about economics, about politics, about science, about the arts, for him in particular. Being a hip-hop artist, he was very concerned to work out a Christian perspective on the arts and music. And he says, in fact, this is a direct quote. He said, Christianity is not just religious truth, it is total truth. So this helps us to break the stereotype and realize ordinary people. My kid may not be the intellectual who wants to sit in his room and read all day, but he still is made in God's image. He still has a mind. He still wants to make sense of things. Finding Truth has one chapter that starts with an anecdote of a football player who never thought he cared about the world of ideas, but who started having a crisis of faith at the end of high school, went to LaBrie and discovered that he did need to have answers. We're all made in God's image. We need to learn how to love God with all our mind, as well as our heart, soul, and strength. And I think that helps parents recognize, too, that, you know, it's the potential is in your kid. And if he doesn't get it, here's an email I received recently. A woman said, I was raised in a home where the rule was that Christians should not expose themselves to non-biblical ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. She said, but when I read your book, I discovered I had unconsciously absorbed ideas from secular philosophers like Rousseau and Kant are the ones she mentioned. She'd never studied their ideas. How many kids are reading philosophy like Rousseau and Kant? And yet their ideas have permeated Western culture. And she said, because I had not studied them, I had no critical grid to recognize and reject them. And she, this is where, if you know, a vacuum will be filled by something else. If you're not learning a Christian worldview, you will end up absorbing secular views on all of the rest of life. You know, you may have church, you may have your devotional lives, your Bible studies, but on all the rest of your life, you may be absorbing secular ideas without even knowing it. So that's why God calls us to be intentional and aware of what's happening in our minds so that we can serve and love him with our minds as well as the rest of life.
You know, I was talking to a group of dads in Duluth just a few weeks ago, and I said, I challenged them. I said, if your faith is relegated to an hour or two on Sunday morning, your kids are going to grow up to see Christianity as hypocritical and meaningless. It needs to permeate your entire life. And there, as you've mentioned, and I've mentioned, there are so many wonderful resources available for moms and dads today. And partnering with the church, this can be done. Our guest is Nancy Percy. The book is called Finding Truth, Five Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. By the way, we have three copies of this book to give away right now. If you would love to have this book in your church library, if you're a parent of a middle school or high school student, this is a book you need to have. If you're just a Christian who wants to learn more about this and be able to dialogue with an atheist or agnostic, man, give us a call. Give us your contact information. At the end of the hour, we'll have a drawing for three copies of this book, Finding Truth. And we'd love to hear from you. The number is 877-93-FAITH. Call us right now, 877-93-FAITH. We'll put you into the drawing. Back with more with Nancy Percy after this break.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Hey, welcome back. If you are a single mom or you know a single mom, man, you have the hardest job in the world. We know that, and we dare you to dream at Bridging the Gap's Single Moms Retreat. You can join other single moms for a time of pampering, relaxation, and fun, where we will dare you to dream about the plans that God has for your life. Some great biblical teaching, a lot of fun, spa treatments, car checkups, the whole nine yards, just designed for single moms. Feel renewed and loved and pampered at Bridging the Gap Single Moms Retreat. It's happening at the Lake Geneva Christian Center in Alexandria, Minnesota, and it's coming up the end of this month, May 29th and 30th. You can learn more about that at our website, myfaithradio.com. Our guest today, Nancy Percy. The book is called Finding Truth, Five Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. Nancy, the most dangerous bumper sticker in the world for evangelical families says, God said it, I believe it, that settles it. I see that bumper sticker and I weep because I think of those kids in that car and what faces them in today's culture. Do you agree?
Yeah, I love it. I agree totally. In fact, my book, Finding Truth, has the front flap says it challenges this mindset of don't think, just believe. And I was thinking back to the question you raised before the break on how parents can fit this into their schedule and how they can pick up what sounds like an overwhelming task. You know, finding truth shows the biblical basis for apologetics. You don't have to start by memorizing and mastering a lot of complex philosophical terminology. Finding truth starts with Romans 1. Romans 1 is where Paul is addressing a congregation that has not heard him speak before. And some of them may not even have been Christians. So he lays out the case for God in a very comprehensive, clear way. And he starts with saying, you know, we all have evidence for God. It's absolutely immediately part of our experience. Think about our own human nature. You know, Romans said we have evidence for God from the created order. Well, human nature is part of the created order, and it tells us what kind of God there has to be. Because all humans are capable of thinking, the first cause that created them must have a mind. Because humans are capable of choosing, the first cause that created them must have a will. As one Christian philosopher sums it up, because a human is a someone and not a something, the source of human life must be a someone. Mm. It can't be the blind automatic forces of nature, as philosophies like materialism or naturalism would tell us. So finding truth starts with Scripture, and it shows how all the apologetic arguments ultimately are based in Scripture. So this makes the approach to apologetics so much simpler. And the Bible has given us a single framework that all the arguments fit into, and it's all in Romans 1. In fact, this was a help for me myself because, you know, here I am, somebody became a Christian in college. I'm very aware of secular ideas because I used to hold them. And I thought, you know, even for me, who does this professionally, to master all the secular isms, the secular theories out there would take a lifetime. And when I discovered Romans 1 and how it provides the answers, it boosted my own confidence. I realize now that Scripture gives us the principles we can apply to any worldview, whether it's secular or religious. The Bible gives us the answers that we need. So this is people who want to know, how can I get a handle on this without spending, 10 years going back to school? Finding Truth, my new book, gives a biblical basis for all apologetics.
Beautiful, Nancy. We've just got about 4 minutes left, and I know we've really scratched the surface. We've talked a lot about the broad concepts in the book, but let me just ask you this. Secularism is probably one of the most common God substitutes that we see in our country today. Just in 3 minutes, unpack how secularism takes the place of God.
Right. Again, I'm starting with Romans 1, and Romans 1 says, if you don't acknowledge the transcendent creator, you will make a god out of something in creation. And we tend to think of statues and golden calves, but an idol can also be something abstract, like matter. Is matter part of the created order? Well, sure it is. So the philosophy of materialism, that matter is all that exists, can also be a god substitute. It sets up matter as the ultimate, eternal, self-existent reality that is the cause and source of everything else. Or reason. Can reason be an idol? Sure it can. So there's a philosophy for that, too. It's called rationalism. And it says human reason is a source and standard of all truth. In fact, Albert Einstein called himself a believing rationalist. So he understood it was a full-blown creed. And so when my students are trying to make sense of all the secular worldviews out there, and it's easy to get lost in the details, I tell them, just go for the idol. What is it that philosophy proposes as the ultimate reality and source of everything else? And that will shape everything in that worldview. So materialism is the dominant worldview in the academic world today. And it says human beings are essentially complex biochemical machines, right? No soul, no spirit, no mind, no free will, nothing beyond matter. That's the dominant worldview that our young people are encountering when they go off to the university. So again, the Scripture gives us the answer. It says, look for the idol. That's the way to get a handle on any secular worldview.
Boy, that's great. Just a wonderful way to frame it, Nancy. And obviously, so many of our young people today are caught up in that, and they're being told that what's most important in life is popularity and physical attractiveness, even academic achievement, which many parents, and not that that's a bad thing, but often families are pushing that at the expense of anything else. And once these kids are steeped in this worldview, that's all there is being the most popular kid, being the most successful kid, having the most stuff, they are going to be in for a rude awakening. Maybe not in their 20s, maybe not in their 30s. At some point in life, they're going to come face to face with the fact that is so empty. Nancy, you've given us so much great material to think about. I want to, again, commend this book. It's called Finding Truth, 5 Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. Nancy, thank you so much for your time, and may the Lord bless you in your teaching and your speaking and your work there at Houston Baptist University.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
That wraps things up for this hour. We'll be back next Saturday at 11 a.m. Central here on the Faith Radio Network. Coming up next, the Saturday edition of Connecting Faith with my friend Neil Stavem. Stick with us and keep the radio right here on Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.